with all the other birds flocking round her. She is so despised by the squaw. The great speckled bird is the Bible, representing the great church of God.
All right, everybody, it's Brian and Vinny Show here at figurefouronline.com/wrestlingobserver.com. It is already September, believe it or not. It's September 1st, 2009, here at figurefouronline.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Apologize for that guy singing over my introduction right there.
Rude of him.
Got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. We've got SmackDown from this past Friday night. We've got Raw from this past Monday night. And we've got WWF Saturday night's main event from January of 1986, if you can believe that, featuring such luminaries as Terry Funk facing Hulk Hogan on the show, and Magnificent Morocco, magnificently stoned, and Dean Malenko. Dean fucking Malenko is a referee. I saw him in one of the matches, and I was like, Christ, that looks like Dean Malenko. And turns out it was. So there you go. Dean Malenko doing WWE refereeing work in Tampa, Florida in 1986. What more can you ask for on this show? Also got some fucking great new songs. It's the only way I can describe them. Fucking great. At least two of them that I have planned to play here today. And all that good stuff. So I guess before we get it started, Vinny, we're going to pretend this is 3 minutes with Brent Kremen, or whatever we used to call it. 60 seconds with Vince Verhey. Your quick thoughts on UFC 102.
It was clear to me about, 20 seconds into that Couture Nogueira fight that I had erred in staying home.
Yes, you did.
Craig and I, we decided, yes, this is a mistake. We should have been there for that fight. It was really, really awesome. The rest of the show, I've actually forgotten almost all of it, frankly. There was a poor opener, then a lot of good action, and then a hell of a main event. Quite likely the fight of the year. Just a fantastic show. And as noted, I wish I had been there. Although, because I watched this in Craig's living room, that did mean I got to watch it with Bernard.
But that was something else.
It was. And he was enthusiastic. Even less knowledgeable about the subject than myself. But aware that he didn't know anything.
Sure.
He was asking questions. And I try to answer the best of my ability, so I can only imagine the education he got.
God, Jesus Christ. But that makes me think I erred and I should have been there.
You may be right. You may be right. But we watched the show with Craig and some of his friends, and our buddy Sonny showed up. And yeah, I got to see a Chris Leben fight, and the probable fight of the year in Couture Nogueira, so I cannot complain about that show.
I don't want to say I told you so, but the very first fucking thing that we saw when we showed up in Portland was a scalper. And there were so many seats in the $200 and $400 area that were not sold that if you would have managed to find, like, the cheapest seat possible, we talked to people who in the middle of the show just said, fuck it, and moved and sat in one of those seats. And mm-hmm. No one came and took it. So it was great. There was nothing even approaching that heat until the main event, though.
Oh, sure.
But I've been to a million UFCs, and as I mentioned before, I don't think I've ever heard a reaction like this where I could barely hear Bruce Buffer. I was two rows away from the cage. There was one row in front of me and then the cage. I could not fucking hear Bruce Buffer because these people were so fucking loud. So anyway, that was really something else right there. If you've not seen that match, by the way, watch it somehow, because it is a really, really great fight.
It was a really, really, really great fight, and it's funny when you watch Randy Couture, because we were watching it thinking, A, it was a really, really great fight, and also, B, it was a very, very close fight, which I guess it's not like Randy was getting killed, but in hindsight, there's no way to score that other than Antonio Nogueira won.
Yeah.
And it was really not close, but there's something about Randy. It just seems like every fight he's in, he's in control.
Not this time.
Not this time.
Or the time with Brock Lesnar.
No, he's certainly not in control at the end of that, for sure.
And it was a couple of moments he did all right, but I was just hoping that in that room with you, Craig, and not so much Bernard, but just seeing Randy Couture at 46 looking like that and fighting like that, that kind of whipped y'all into shape.
That subject did come up. We all noted that we were below the average fighter in the show, especially that hit Randy, yes, at 46.
Yes, he is older than you by 13 years, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like in the, I was just reading the Mildred Burke book, where she used to have photos taken of her in a bikini, and they used to put it in the, like in the police stations to shame the officers. So, kind of similar to that, I thought. Anyway, let's do a song here. I just cannot wait to play this song. But you know what? I'm gonna do SmackDown first, and then I'm gonna play this song.
All right.
Because these are all they're so great. One of them was so great, I actually, Lance is a big fan of this show, Lance Storm, and I sent it to him in advance.
Wow.
I didn't even make the poor fucker have to wait to hear it. I sent it to him in advance, and he was madly entertained by it. So. We'll play that song after this, after we begin the show here with the SmackDown program on Friday featuring the Doom, the end of the career at this point of Jeff Hardy. And by the way, if you want these spoilers for SmackDown this coming Friday with what happened with Rey Mysterio, those are on the front page right now, so go check those out. But anyway, this particular show opened... How did it open?
CM Punk came out.
That's right. How it always opens. Punk came out and cut a promo.
I am far more into Punk coming out and cutting a promo every week than the Main Event Mafia coming out and cutting a promo every week.
They said he was the only straight-edge champion in WWE history. What a fucking line that is.
I'm sure that's true.
What a line that is. Actually, it's not. Bob Backlund, I'm sure. But and Bruno Sammartino, for Christ's sake.
Did Bruno have wine?
I don't know.
I bet Bruno had wine. I suspect Bob Backlund may have had a beer or two.
I don't know about that one.
Of the two, I will grant you that Bob is more likely to be a teetotaler. That's the word.
Has Lawler ever been WWE champion? Because that'd be another one. But anyway, so he came out and showed a video of the SummerSlam match. Said he was going to show because Jeff was probably too intoxicated to remember what happened. And did the usual deal. Talked about Undertaker. Choke slamming him afterwards and all this and that. And
he said
anyway,
he had taken no pain medication, unlike these weak people who probably would be on a morphine drip in his status.
Well,
that was a great line.
So Jeff finally came out and they had an argument back and forth. And Punk finally said, "This company is not big enough for both of us. Loser leaves WWE match." And Jeff paced back and forth like he wasn't sure what to do and then finally said, "You're on!" And Teddy came out and made it official. And
I had no problem.
I know. I was like, that was the stupidest part of this whole show.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, why does Teddy Long not give a shit that either Jeff fucking Hardy or CM Punk is leaving WWE forever after this match?
He's going to lose half of his SummerSlam main event, and he's okay with that.
Yeah, he's just like, well, you guys want it.
Whatever. What a shitty GM. He should be on probation.
Yeah.
Vince is right.
Matt Hardy and John Morrison against the Hart Dynasty. Was a fine little match, I guess.
It was short.
Gave Kid a clothesline. Morrison hit Harry with the Pele kick. Starship Pain. And super rushed for a SmackDown tag, but it was fine while it lasted.
It was fine for the 3 or 4 minutes we got. It needed about 6 minutes more. But, yeah, like you say, it was 3 minutes of okayness.
We had Melina meeting with Maria. Melina, her character is so annoying. She's still going on and on about Dolph. And Maria, now she's telling her that she saw Dolph with another woman at SummerSlam, after SummerSlam. And so Maria told her to hit the bricks because she was just jealous. And after she left, Dolph walked up. And so Maria could not help but ask the question. And he said, "Yes, in fact, I was with another woman after SummerSlam. It was my sister, Kristen." And Maria said she was so sorry. And that was the end of that.
Any segment on SmackDown with the women acting backstage is just guaranteed to suck.
Maria's not a bad actress.
Maria's not horrible, but Melina is.
Melina is wretched.
And she was in this.
Yeah.
So it sucked.
By the way, I talked to Lance briefly tonight. He's on the show on Thursday, and he says he has a bone to pick with me and Dave about the Divas. He wouldn't say what it was. He's saving it for the show. So
a tease.
I'm going to have to expose him again in this debate.
What happened to the last debate you had?
I forget, but of course I exposed him. We had Michelle come out. Actually, it was Drew McIntyre in his debut against R-Truth. Drew kicked him in the head as he was coming through the ropes, laid him out.
It was so awesome.
And
Truth was out rapping and was over like never before, and everyone was into it, and he's doing his shtick. And he's just as he steps to the ropes, he says, "What's up?" And right then, McIntyre booted him in the head, and the microphone picked it up. So you got the loud noise, and I howled and howled with laughter. And Drew said, "You fans are all about partying and rapping and having a good time." Well, I'm Drew McIntyre, and the party's over.
Sure. Please don't hit that mic, by the way.
Sorry.
That mic is worth more than... Let me think what you
probably
own.
More than this laptop.
That you actually, it legitimately is.
Yeah.
Don't tell everyone what you paid, but I know what you paid. And that mic is, in fact, worth... You don't even want to know how much more, but it is. Anyway, Drew's been working with Ricky Steamboat.
Good.
And I watched Ricky Steamboat tonight from 1986. And I hope Drew fucking McIntyre, who wasn't even born, I would bet, in 1986. I hope he appreciates what he's got. We had Michelle come out on crutches. Who was not on crutches last week, if I recall correctly.
I don't think so, no.
Said Melina brutally attacked her last week, and now she was handicapped. And then she said, and I quote, "She's ruined the night for everyone. Thanks, Melina." She was awesome here.
That was probably
this her... was the highlight of this entire thing, in fact.
It actually was, and probably her best moment as a speaker ever.
It was Melina versus Layla. And this fucking sucked. But Michelle made it great. And then after Melina won, she knocked Michelle backwards over a chair, just like a complete bitch.
Yeah.
For no good reason.
There was nothing. She won her match, then she went out and attacked the girl on crutches.
I realize Ed in San Antonio is also Hispanic, and he loves Melina, probably because he thinks she's hot. That's great and all. Maybe Ed has never seen another hot Hispanic. Believe me, they're out there. But how can anyone like Melina's character?
I don't know.
This is like an honest-to-God answer this question for me. I mean, somebody...
What is likable about
this
her?
Is another one. Please send me emails if you're a big fan of Melina's character, because I need to know who you are and why. Again, I will not mock you. I just would like to hear this other opinion of this person.
She screams, she gossips backstage, she sticks nose in other people's business, and she attacks defenseless injured women.
Yeah.
Way to go.
And she screams. Let me throw that in
again.
She
also screams.
Kane against Ray. This was a...
there was... I think it was a local commercial just for the local My Network affiliate, but it was for the Divas on SmackDown on Friday nights. It had the worst wrestling I've ever seen here in this commercial. A poor, poor ad.
He beat up Ray repeatedly until he was DQ'd for it.
Mm-hmm.
So shitty. And then Kali ran out, and they had the fucking worst brawl since Jenna and Charmel. This was horrible. And then Kali threw Kane outside, which was even more horrible. It was completely fake. And beat him backstage with a kendo stick. And then Dolph ran out and laid out Ray with a reverse bulldog. I can't even do justice to how bad Kane versus Kali was. They are continuing this feud after what they saw at SummerSlam.
We need more of this, they said. In Kali's defense, I think the spot was supposed to be that he was trying to hit the tree slam, and Kane escaped by launching himself over the top rope.
Whatever.
It's less horrible.
All I have to say is I was watching that 86 Saturday night's main event, which, by the way, was early 86, so it was essentially 85. This 1985 edition of this program, and there was a battle between Uncle Elmer and Jesse Ventura. It was beyond atrocious.
Yes.
But it was still so entertaining in its atrociousness. Unlike Kane and Kali, which is just bad. Like, you can't believe something so bad made TV. I don't know. Shit was better back then, I've determined.
And I did watch, we'll get to that show, but I watched it thinking, this sucks, but I am having fun.
Yeah.
And the crowd's going crazy, so yeah.
Didn't think about that here.
No, I mostly thought this sucked, and it sucks.
Shad and Jericho had a match, and broke down into insanity, so Teddy made it a tag team battle. So in the middle of this tag team battle, Show got a hot tag, Shad turned around, illegal punch, or the knockout punch, which should be illegal, but for some reason is not, and that was that. I love the finish.
Yes.
I love Show punching people out for the finish.
Mm-hmm.
That was good.
And then, again, another short match, and this show was way, way below recent SmackDown standards at this point. just a bunch of three-minute matches ranging from bad to okay.
Then we had the Punk Jeff Loser Leaves Town cage match, and that was really good. Somebody asked the star rating for this. I can't go 4 stars, maybe 3 3/4. It was really good, but it certainly was not at the level of the TLC match or anything like that. And Punk, of course, won clean. And afterwards, they did the big deal where people were chanting, "Thank you, Jeff." He cut a promo, talked about how when the time is right, I'll see you in the future. Thank you all. They found a number of people who were crying, weeping, like tears rolling down their cheeks. And so as he's walking up the ramp to leave, Punk flew out with the title and laid him out. Now, I was talking to Dave about this off the air last night. Sadly off the air. It was after we'd ended. We were talking about SmackDown very briefly. And his exact words were, "I loved it," in regard to Punk laying out Jeff there at the end of the show. He loved it. Those are his exact words. Loved it. I hated it. I hated it. Some of you were going to ask why. I will tell you why. Punk beat the guy clean in the cage match. He beat the guy clean. All right? Great. You got a huge win over a huge star, and you sent the guy packing. To me, that's enough. Now, Dave's argument was, well, he needed something to get even more heat. All he did was beat the guy clean. He needs something to get heat on him. Fine. Okay? But here's the problem. Jeff got beaten in a Loser Leaves Town cage match that was signed at the beginning of this show. All right? No build. Not like a week's build or anything like that. He gets signed to this match at the beginning of the show. He does the match. He loses. Then he does his promo about how he's going to leave for right now. Okay? They found so many fans crying. And they showed them on television. They played this up big. That by the time he started walking up the ramp, I think everybody at home, or at least a lot of the people at home, probably believed that this is more than just a goofy one-week angle. This guy really is leaving. Maybe not forever, but he's not coming back anytime soon. This is like a legit... This guy's really leaving. This is the real deal right here. The fucking second Punk laid him out, all out the window. I just picture everybody at home seeing that and thinking, oh, well, it's just an angle. He'll be back on SmackDown next week. Which he's not going to be, but I just don't think that was the impression you wanted to leave fans with. It felt so real for a while there that they were actually... This was a stipulation that people could actually believe. And down the road, I'm sure they will. But Punk laying him out, to me, it just screamed goofy wrestling angle.
I'm with Dave.
Why?
I love this. Because the fans cared so much, it was not... It was not CM Punk whacking Jeff and, I don't know. At no point did I think Jeff was coming back next week. I don't think anyone else did
either. That's because you know.
I don't think any of the fans did. If the fans thought he was coming back next week, they would not have been weeping.
But the weeping happened before it became just a goofy wrestling angle. When he was cutting his promo and talking about how he was leaving the company and people started crying... And they had all this, and they deliberately had all these shots of people crying.
Yes.
That made it seem so different from your average wrestling angle. Your average goofy wrestling angle with bad guys beating up good guys and all this. This was something that actually for once felt real. And then as soon as he's backing up the ramp and he gets laid out, it was like, oh, another goofy wrestling angle. I did not like it at all.
What would be the point if they just let him walk back? To get over a star who was leaving?
To get over the idea that he really lost.
We saw him lose. He did a speech about leaving. He said he'd be back for a while. He had a very nice goodbye segment, a nice, cuddly, warm moment, and then CM Punk pissed all over him and the fans.
Why couldn't Punk open up next week's show pissing over him and the fans? Once he's already gone and he's not back on the show, and they watch the entire show and they see him not coming back. I just thought this was bad timing. It's made it just seem like just another wrestling angle. I'm trying to think of what this would even be like. I don't know.
I don't know, because I do not think it was just another wrestling angle. I think it was
That made it another wrestling angle, with the heel coming out and laying him out one more time. I didn't like it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't like it.
I'm sorry you didn't like it, Brian.
It was
The match was really good. Probably not as good as the TLC match, but it saved the show to a large degree. They went a little over 20 minutes, and I actually cut. When it ended, I was like, wow, they could have gone longer. So, hell of a job by these guys.
What about Ric Flair's big retirement Raw? Remember the retirement Raw where they spent all the time bidding him farewell? Should a heel have come out and beat him up right as the show was going off the air to add heat to him, to get heat on him?
It's a different circumstance.
But, I mean, it's basically the same thing. It's a babyface saying goodbye.
As emotional as the fans were when Jeff Hardy left, you cannot compare it to Ric Flair's legit retirement.
But, I mean, Jeff is no longer under contract. Mm-hmm. He may never come back.
It's possible.
It's.
And if he does,
it's unlikely.
It still won't be the same as Ric Flair retiring.
I realize that, but I'm just giving an example of another situation. It was a real deal that people bought as a real deal. You wouldn't want to just ruin that by adding some goofy run into it.
I would say that.
I'm trying to think of who else
this
is retired.
The emotional investment in Jeff Hardy's speech, while heavy by the fans, was not in the same universe as that of the Ric Flair retirement Raw.
I understand, but I'm just making a
and I'm saying there's a point in emotional intensity where yes, it would become stupid to it would be stupid for a heel to come out and attack whoever's leaving. And I'm saying Ric Flair was that intense, Jeff Hardy not that intense.
They still had people crying and weeping.
I know that.
This was a big deal to these people. I just hated it, everybody, and I strongly disagree with anybody who thought it was great. So, it has nothing to fucking do with CM Punk, by the way. If John Morrison had done this, or Dolph Ziggler, or Matt Hardy, I would have hated that as well.
I was just happy because they prefaced the match, rather, with a Matt and Jeff promo, and it was Matt wishing Jeff luck, saying he respected Jeff, and said the Hardys would one day take over SmackDown, and this just, that felt like a hokey rest of the angle being, I am going to stab you in the back and send you out off the show. And thankfully, they did not do that.
So it wasn't a wacky angle at the end.
That would have been.
All right, let's play this fucking song here so I can stop thinking about this goddamn stupid-ass, shitty-ass ending to SmackDown this week. I think the worst pay-per-view in years. This pay-per-view was horrible. Horrible.
It's hard to argue that.
Horrible, wretched,
vile,
appalling,
useless,
atrocious, insulting,
devoid of merit.
God, this was horrible. -5! It was Jenna Maraska, everybody, the Survivor chick, and Charmel.
It was an entrance designed to show off her asshole.
And these assholes that sent in these matches claiming they were -5 stars, they had no idea what they were in for in 2009. The only fucking thing missing from this was the Fire Russo chant. Jenna proceeded to do a lap dance on her face and pin her with her vagina.
Great.
There you go.
I remember that match. It was bad.
It was very, very bad. Maybe when Sting retires at Bound for Glory, someone could come out and beat him up at the end to get heat on them. God, I hated that. All right, let's talk about Raw here before I start sweating even more. And Raw, let me guess, you hated the end of Raw, too.
Hell no.
Really? Because a lot of people did.
They're dumb.
You people are wrong.
Yeah.
Again! This is two times I've been right now on this show. Anyway, it opened up with Dusty coming out as the guest host. And
I'm cool with that.
Lawler and Cole were talking about what a great show this was going to be. And talked about the Hall of Fame and this and that, and said he was so proud of being inducted, and he was also proud of his son, Cody. People booed, and he said, well, you know, he's got an attitude sometimes, but come on, he's my boy! A man will do anything for his son. And so out came, anyway, he announced that the main event of Breaking Point coming up in 2 weeks, it's actually a week and a half. What is it? It's like one more Raw.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was going to be John Cena against Cody Rhodes. Because, he said, tonight, it was going to be Randy versus Cody for the title with Dusty Rhodes himself as the guest enforcer and John Cena as the guest referee. So then Orton came out and he was very upset. Called Dusty a coward and this and that and said, Cody wouldn't even agree to this. And then, of course, Cody came out and said, I do, in fact, agree with this, and I'm going to do this. It is not personal. It's merely business. And that's that. And Orton determined the fix was on, and Dusty said, correct! The fix is on. So there you go.
There's a lot to love about this. First of all, just Dusty Rhodes coming out and being Dusty. I defy anyone listening to name a cooler, fat, old white guy. Cannot be done. So he came out, and the announcers were speculating what he might do, and I immediately thought, maybe he'll book War Games. And off the top of my head, I thought, Legacy, Big Show and Jericho versus John Cena, DX, Henry, and MVP. Right there. We'll put him in War Games. Fun.
What kind of a lineup is that?
It's the top five heels on this show, and the baby faces they are currently feuding with.
Personally, I would book War Games with some better workers than Mark Henry and the Big Show, but go on.
So I would watch that. So, yes, then he did the whole spiel you already detailed, the highlight of which was, after announcing the main event of the show, which was Cody versus Orton with Cena as ref and Dusty as at ringside, he then announced, I'm tired, and leaned on the ropes for a while. He was blown up from creating this promo, and he made that cool. So, yeah, and then pretty much everything else happened, and then when Randy Orton said, so the fix is in, and Dusty confirmed, the fix is in, that's where I knew this ending was going to be 47 kinds of awesome.
16 of a Battle Royal. Yeah.
The best part of this was before commercial where they had the Divas backstage with the referee giving instructions.
Yeah. It was very bad. And Gail and Jillian worked for like 5 minutes together.
And it
botched
sucked.
So many spots.
God, it was bad.
Gail tossed her and then Beth tossed Gail and won. Beth disappears for 30 days, and all of a sudden she's just back being pushed. I don't know. I don't care.
Who cares?
This sucked.
It was very, very bad, particularly when it was down to Gail and Jillian, which was strange, because...
Maybe this is what Lance had a bone to pick with me and Dave about. Maybe he thought this match was good.
No, that's impossible.
How could that be?
I don't know. The part where Gail went for a Hurricane Rana and Jillian didn't go over and then just dropped her ass on the small of Gail's back and the fans all started booing. Maybe he liked that.
I don't know.
I bet he didn't.
Jericho and MVP, a very long match for some reason, starting at 9:25 through a commercial break. And good near falls at the end, and then Jericho hit the code breaker out of nowhere for the pin. Keep in mind, MVP is challenging for the tag titles in a week and a half, and he just got pinned like a geek here, so... That was something else.
It was a pretty good match, but especially I'm just happy they gave it so much time on Raw. But MVP looked very sloppy at points. He looked hesitant running the ropes for a while, and then he took a lion salt and was way out of position for the... Or excuse me, he took the bulldog, and then was way out of position for the lion salt to follow. And so Jericho walked around and looked at him and covered his mouth and finally said, move! And MVP finally moved, and Jericho ended up missing the move anyway, so... not a great night, but by the time the match was over, it was okay.
DX had their first meeting with Dusty, and Dusty promised Cody would give one of them a title shot after he won, and Hunter was all excited, and Sean was like, come on, you've had plenty of opportunities. And they began to argue, and then decided they would talk about this when we get home.
Right. To the DX estate.
I guess they are living together.
Or the
now.
Loft.
So then Dusty suggested they watch Rise and Fall of WCW, and they had a deal here where they plugged all of their respective DVDs, and then Sean was like, shouldn't we be watching Raw? And Dusty said, nah, fuck that, I'm in charge. I guess someone tried to explain this was a takeoff on, Dusty would tell them what happened on Raw, like Bischoff used to reveal the results or something.
That is reaching.
I don't know. All I know is this was weird.
All I know is, if I sat down and tried to defend it logically, I could not. I'm sure there's a dozen things here that if TNA tried to do, I'd bury them for. I love this promo, and if that makes me a hypocrite, I don't care. I loved watching Dusty plug his DVD and Sean plug his, and I love watching them make insider jokes, and I love them burying this show. Made me laugh.
Midget and Chavo, Texas Bull Rope match, where the winner had to hog tie his opponent. I will admit...
You're done.
I didn't watch this match. I fast-forwarded through it. There was one funny thing where the referee presented the cow's head to all four sides of the ring like it was a championship belt. I fast-forwarded through the entire thing, and then afterwards I saw Evan run in and beat up Chavo, and this sucked.
Evan's involvement actually bothers me more. If they were just doing Chavo versus the Midget every week for a wacky comedy segment to make the kids laugh, I would say, okay, doesn't make me laugh. Clearly, I see the fans, they seem into it, fine. But Evan's involvement in this the past couple weeks indicates he's going to be feuding with Chavo. And the build for Evan's feud with Chavo is Chavo losing 100 matches in a row to a leprechaun.
Yeah.
So why would I care about him feuding with Evan?
At least Evan's on the show.
I guess that's a plus. Now, he's not wrestling, mind you. He's just on the show.
Big Show and Mark Henry. My God. They worked a headlock. And the best part was, the best part was they worked the headlock facing the wrong way. They were facing away from the hard camera, so we just had to stare at both of their fat asses. Show appeared to have never been in a headlock in his life. Henry appeared to have not ever applied a headlock in his life, or at least both of them for the last decade. And finally, Show undid a buckle, sent Henry into it for the DQ, gave him a knockout punch. So yes, heel champions got the better of the weak babyface challengers in two straight matches on this show.
Michael Cole was talking.
Sweet Christ.
Michael Cole was going off about how Mark Henry won and MVP went toe-to-toe. I was like, well, MVP got pinned at the end, and I'm watching here. Mark Henry is down on the ground unconscious and Big Show standing over him. I disagree with Michael Cole. They've been built well. This match was horrible. I was going to tear apart the headlock spot, but then I saw Uncle Elmer and probably Jesse do a headlock spot in their match, and it was much worse, let's be honest. But I just love the fact this match was even booked. These guys are wrestling in 2 weeks, and so their idea to make us want to pay to see that was to have them wrestle here, thinking it would be so good we'd want to pay to see more. It backfired.
We had Orton meeting with Cody and Ted, and Orton reminded Cody that what happened tonight was not personal. It was business. Very important line.
It was, although a comment in hindsight left me confused.
In hindsight?
We'll get to the end of the show, but...
Are you still confused right now?
I don't understand what was the business decision about what Orton did at the end of the show.
Killing Cody Rhodes' dad?
How is that a business decision?
Well, it's not personal.
I see.
Legacy's business does not involve a big fat guy who's a babyface. It's business.
We'll get to it then.
Dusty was watching the... I almost want to jump forward right now because now you've completely baffled me. How can anyone not understand what happened in the main event? Anyway, they had another segment with Dusty and Sean and Hunter where basically Sean was... he was told that he was champion during the worst years of the Monday Night War for WWE. And then as soon as he left, it turned around for WWE. And everybody made a lot of money when he was hurt. And this made him very upset. And they also made fun of Johnny B. Badd. And Hunter said whoever came up with that gimmick was a fucking moron. And Dusty said, well, that was me. And a lot of inside jokes, but funny.
And again, I don't care. These are jokes made for my personal amusement, and they amuse me. Therefore, they get a thumbs up. I don't know if they sold any DVDs. I don't know if they sold any pay-per-views, and it's irrelevant. They made me laugh, and that's more important.
Miz, Swagger, Carlito, and Kofi for the IC title. It was a pretty good match. Some good 3- and 4-way spots. Carlito was regularly out of position, however. Took some shitty bumps, especially trying to catch a high cross. I don't even know what he did, but I can't even call it a bump. But anyway, Miz hit his finish on Jack. Carlito hit his finish on Miz. Kofi hit his finish on Carlito. So Kofi got the pin.
All four guys worked their asses off. Especially Miz, of all people, was really into this. And they got in enough big dives where Kofi dove on all three guys or two guys at a time and took them all out. And they all had the parade of finishers to win. So this got a giant thumbs up for me. I also like Jack Swagger has a new entrance where he's always done this kind of wacky little dance. Then he had a push-ups. And now he has a wacky little dance that's extended as he kind of laughs back and forth and grabs his arms behind his back. And then he falls and does push-ups. And while he's doing push-ups, pyro goes off. Awesome.
Beth and Mickey, why we had two women's matches on this show, I don't know. featuring the same people, or at least one of them. But anyway, Beth beat the shit out of her the whole time, and then finally went for a tilt-a-whirl. Mickey turned it into a DDT for the pin. So it was a creative little finish. Match was all right. No heat whatsoever.
No, it had absolutely zero heat. I thought it was pretty good, an above-average women's match at least. And the Mickey was making her one-armed comeback and chicken-winging her bad arm to her side and throwing punches with a good hand. It was really awesome. Jerry Lawler didn't even notice until Michael Cole, of all people, had to point it out to him. And he says, there's Mickey making her one-armed comeback. And Lawler said, oh, you're right. And the fans never, ever cared about this. And sometimes the fans don't care, and it's the fault of the wrestlers. They have not done their job. They have not involved the crowd. And sometimes it's the crowd's fault. And this time, I declare the crowd to be wrong. This is a good match. It's their fault. They did not get into it.
We had more with Dusty and DX. This was the return of the Shockmaster, a recreation. And there was one good thing about this, and that was Hunter trying to explain this hilarious joke to Sean, who had never seen it. And it was one of those jokes where you just have to be there. And that was the exact reaction that he gave Hunter. And Arn Anderson played the voice, and Santino played the Shockmaster. And I thought this one was lame.
It was the worst of the three, I would say. It would have been better if they had just shown the original Shockmaster clip. Because I guarantee you, the vast majority of people in this building and the vast majority of people watching at home had no idea.
It gets worse. It gets worse. Think about how stupid this is. They were plugging the DVD by doing a recreation of the Shockmaster skit, or not a skit, the Shockmaster debut, which isn't even on the fucking DVD, and they announced that!
Yeah.
What?
As an effective advertisement, this was no buys. Literally, no buys.
Cena did an interview about the main event, and said he was going to be an unbiased referee tonight, and then cut a promo about the pay-per-view, and it was quite the passionate promo, guaranteed victory at Breaking Point because he would not quit, and rarely do you see a man with such passion, cutting such a passionate promo from the heart, I guess you could say. And there were people on the board that said, Cena sold pay-per-view buys with this promo. And I remember thinking, what a fantastic delivery Cena has given here. But then like a day later, I look back and, did this really sell a single buy?
At the end of the day, it's still Orton versus Cena again.
I mean, do we really want to fucking see Cena versus Orton again? I mean, who is clamoring to see this match again?
I don't know.
I'm not going to buy this pay-per-view, but now that I've heard this promo, I want to see Orton and Cena again.
Exactly. I'm excited to see them wrestle again, and I know people who are excited to see them wrestle again were probably excited before they saw this promo. So, it was good. I don't know if it mattered.
I like also emails about anybody who's excited to see this match again at Breaking Point. Because if you are, please email me. Because, again, I would like to know why. How many times can we see these guys wrestle in some form or another? And then we had Orton and Cody with Cena as the referee. Dusty was backstage giving his son a pep talk. And then he came out and grabbed the mic and said, earlier he told everyone there was nothing a father would not do for his son. And, Cena, I'm sorry, buddy, he said. And Orton and Cody jumped Cena, stomped a mud hole in him, and then, of course, DiBiase came out, and then DX made the save, and ran him off, and...
Well, no, they started to run wild.
Yeah, Dusty took his boot off and whacked him. So, after the heels had laid out the baby faces, Dusty raised everybody's hands, and they were all celebrating, and as this was occurring, Orton grabbed him and gave him the RKO, and Cody was just devastated that Orton had done this to his father. And Orton just stared a hole in him. And Cody finally backed off and cowered and hung his head. And that was the end of that. And this was awesome. This was fabulous. What are people talking about when they say that this makes no sense?
I don't know.
Listen. This has been established for months now. I'm not even making this stuff up. Cody Rhodes is the guy who idolizes Randy Orton. He idolizes the man. Ted DiBiase is the guy who really couldn't give a shit one way or the other. He's in the group. He doesn't really like Randy all that much. He just watched the promos and everything. That's the story they're trying to put across. Last week when they did the deal at the start of the show where where Randy was yelling at DiBiase's brother, and Orton and Cody jumps up and goes, well, we all knew Randy was going to win anyway. That's his fucking character, okay? People going, why would Cody want to beat up Cena more than he would want the title? Because that's Cody's fucking character. He does not want a match with his hero. He wants to be there for his hero. He is a mark for Randy Orton. So, before the show, I'm sure that Randy Orton and Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase all went to Dusty and said, listen, can you do us this favor? Dusty said, sure, I'll do you this fucking favor. The swerve was on. They beat the shit out of Cena. But then, at the end of the show, Legacy does not need a fat old guy added to the cast of characters. And so Randy Orton laid him the fuck out with the RKO, also to prove the point that Legacy as a group, the group is more important than anything. It's more important than family. It's more important than blood. They're the three fucking guys. So he laid out Dusty Rhodes to send that message to Cody. As he'd said earlier, this is business. It's not personal. So Cody was very, very angry, but then because he's a fucking mark for Randy Orton, he backed down, he cowered his head, he backed up to the corner. This all made 1,000% perfect sense.
Okay, let's talk about the only problem I had with the laying out of the Elder Rhodes was that it just felt like that was one where I feel like that the way you felt about the Punk laying out Jeff, where you thought he could do it next week. I thought this was just...
But they're not going to have Dusty next week.
Why not?
Because the Shaq and Big Show angle went nowhere.
Yeah, but Dusty Rhodes works for them, and people know that.
But why do you even need to carry it on another week?
It just felt like too much in too short a time.
I disagree. This is like...
As far as what they did, I actually agree with you.
On the show, I'm an asshole, as some people have said. Like, I'm the heel and you're the good guy. Now, let's say you and I had done this exact... Like, you and me and who would be a good third guy for our legacy?
Craig? Brent?
Oh, Christ. How about Buddy?
Sure.
Craig would be fine as well. Just say it's you, me, and Craig. And we all learn that your father is going to be the GM. So we all make the deal to do this entire thing. Okay, when the deal's done, I'm laying your fucking father out, okay?
Dick.
Exactly! Egg-fucking-zactly! I used him! I used him for the day, and then I fucking kicked him to the curb! That is the entire fucking thing! I'm not gonna wait a week and fucking go to your dad's house and have him tell war stories and make us margaritas and dick around and pal around with this guy for a week and then lay him out, okay? He was a GM tonight. I fucking used him to get what I wanted, and then I fucking laid him out. Why wait?
Well, for what they did, I agree it was totally awesome, and it all made sense. It planted plenty of seeds for the future, because at some point, hopefully in 2010... Cody will turn on Randy Orton, and you know that the fans were chanting Cody, 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 as Cody basically hid in the corner and wept like a good heel. He sulked.
Yes.
And everything about it was good. I didn't like the timing, but you make some good points, so fine. But as far as people saying Cody should want the title shot more than he should want to lay out John Cena, A, as you noted, Randy's his hero, and all Cody wants in life is to make his hero happy. But even beyond this specific instance of how they've set up Cody Rhodes is a heel. That means he's not, part of being a heel means he's not interested in competition or integrity. He has his goals, he has his motivations, and none of them are, you know, to be the best. They are to make money, to live in Orton's shadow, whatever it is. But Arn Anderson never challenged Ric Flair for the world title. That's the preeminent group, but when Shawn was champion in DX, Hunter never challenged him. Part of being a babyface is having, you know, being a competitor. Part of being a heel is not. You want to destroy your opponent, lay him out, destroy him, whatever, but as long as your buddy's champ, that's usually good enough.
That's the whole point of this thing.
Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does.
All right.
This whole thing, I love this whole thing, and if you disagree, I don't know what you're talking about here. I was very confused at people who were confused. I mean, I'm confused about a lot of things, but this one made absolutely perfect sense to me. All right, let's play a song, then we're going to jump into the time machine and go back 24 fucking years for WWE Saturday night's main event. So this was also a really good one. Maybe it'll play one of these goddamn days. Jesus Christ, I had this whole thing fucking set up and it didn't play. All right, here we go. Fucker. Figure4Online.com.
Excellent question.
Satchel ass!
No! No!
Vincent Verhey.
In the sack.
That was a good one.
Well,
that was fantastic.
I guess all I can say to that is thank you.
Holding out for
Vincent Verhey.
A Vinny. Should have been a holding out for a Vinny. Oh, well. Either way, it's a ridiculous concept. Seriously.
Aiden and I agree with that.
All right. The Saturday night's main event from 1986, January 4th, 1986 to be exact, head-to-head with the Tokyo Dome. But that would have been quite the battle right there. Oh, no, the Hogan, it was a they were in Florida, so they had a bunch of beach-related vignettes. Actually, at a pool.
Water slide, yeah.
Yeah. Hogan was making protein shakes to prepare for a bout with Terry Funk. That's right. Hulk Hogan and Terry fucking Funk. It's going to be the main event on the show. And he gave some to Gene Okerlund, who proceeded to begin flexing. We had Vince open up.
And then Roddy Piper was spying on hillbillies through binoculars.
And we had Vince opening up the show, that being Vince McMahon. Although you would never know that because he actually said the word wrestling. It was shocking. Then Jesse Ventura announced that he was going to be wrestling tonight. And so he wasn't going to leave Vince alone. Much like on this show, that would be a disaster. So Bobby Heenan was replacing him.
He was replacing the body with the brain, he said.
Yeah.
It was a simple but great line.
We had Piper and Orton do a promo. By the way, Bob Orton, everybody. Inconceivable this man is Randy's father.
Isn't it, though?
It's ridiculous. So, yeah. Then we had the match. And what a match it was to open up Saturday night's main event on January 4th, 1986.
It was Roddy Piper, Cowboy Bob Orton, and Jesse Ventura against Hillbilly Jim, Uncle Elmer, and Cousin Luke.
Boy, was this something else. Jesse Ventura, at least in 1986, was horrendous.
I don't know if I've ever... this may actually be the first wrestling I've ever seen him do.
Hopefully the last.
Quite possibly the last. And he was very, very horrible, and yet worlds better than Uncle Elmer.
Well, I guess.
Yes.
I guess.
Yes.
All I know is you know, there were a lot of superstar Billy Graham ripoffs, including Ventura and Hulk Hogan.
Sure.
Hulk Hogan worked fucking circles around Jesse Ventura on this show.
Undoubtedly.
Hulk Hogan was Ric Flair in his prime compared to Jesse Ventura on this show. So they had an awful six-man. In the middle of this, we had a line by Bobby Heenan, which 24 years later, I still can't fathom. He said the hillbillies were being beaten down. And he throws out the line, "I love it when them hillbillies are on their knees. That's when they look the best to me."
He said this.
Huh.
That's the exact words.
Side of Heenan I've never seen before.
Nor expected.
Not really, no.
Did not see that coming.
And then Orton hit Luke with his cast, and Piper put him in what today would be described as a rear naked choke, the sleeper hold for the submission. And this was lame.
So something else is what I wrote down. It was, well, Piper and Orton are good. Jesse sucks. Uncle Elmer is ungodly horrible. Hillbilly Jim was Hillbilly Jim. And Cousin Luke appeared to be a bland but more or less competent person. So there you go.
Now, this was saved by Jesse Ventura returning the commentary and saying, and I quote, "I thought I was just outstanding in the ring."
He was actually out when he was not wrestling. He was the man on the show.
Yeah, his promos.
He had a lot of good stuff to say. He pointed out he was the only announcer in sports who would back up his words. You would never see Vin Scully step up into the batter's box and take a 95-mile-an-hour pitch. You would never see Brent Musburger put on football pads and try to tackle someone, but here he was getting in the ring and backing up what he said.
His commentary was as great as his wrestling was horrible.
Yes.
And it was quite horrible. We had JYD stripping and branding Jimmy Hart. This was a replay segment, and so Hart had demanded revenge in a water slide challenge. Wrestling was so much better back then.
This is the thing you may have seen in the halcyon days of OVW, but nowhere else on earth this decade. The
JYD.
Water slide challenge.
Yeah.
There was a water slide. They started at the top. First one to the bottom wins.
Yeah. And JYD won. Jesse Ventura accused him of cheating.
Yes.
And then they just moved on.
And then he moved on to interview Terry Funk, who was at poolside watching the water slide challenge.
He was 41 years old here, and he looked nothing like he did at the Bash 99, which we just watched a couple of weeks ago, when he was in phenomenal shape. He was fat. He was white. He was flabby. He was a different man.
It was ironic because he mentioned this was right after Hulk Hogan had been on Sports Illustrated on the cover. So he said he wanted to be the next man on Sports Illustrated, so he needed a good tan.
Well, he
had some work to do.
Sure. We had clips of him hitting Hogan with a cattle prod for the DQ in what was described on screen as winter 1985. That's what it said.
Yes.
We got the rematch here tonight. Hogan vowed revenge and said JYD would be in his corner as backup. They had the match. Looking at this match with 2009 eyes, I gave this match 3 stars. I thought Hogan was completely competent. I thought Funk did a great job carrying him. They had a spot I've actually never seen before in my entire life.
Is it the drop down?
Yeah, Funk did a drop down, and Hogan was hitting the ropes and jumping over him every time. But instead of jumping over him, he stepped on his back repeatedly.
Yeah, just over and over again.
Yeah.
Like 4 times in a row. I can't believe no one has stolen that.
No. Hogan was phenomenally over. He hit an axe fucking bomber, which is his big lariat.
For the win.
A big elbow drop. But that was not the end.
I'm sorry.
There was more to come. Funk choked him with tape behind the ref's back, hit the big pile driver. Hogan kicked out. Eventually hulked up, big boot, went to suplex him inside, but Hart hit him with a branding iron. He still got his foot on the ropes. They did everything they could to make you think that Terry Funk might actually beat Hulk Hogan. But then Hogan took his head off with a second axe bomber for the pin. This match was totally fine.
Sure.
Hulk Hogan was a totally fine professional wrestler in it.
The only knock I would have on Hogan here was, this is before the trademark red and yellow. He had a Hulkamania shirt on, but when they showed clips of him earlier, he was wearing all white trunks, knee pads, and boots. Here, he was wearing like powder blue trunks and boots with red knee pads, and it was fugly. The match was really good, and anything that has an axe bomber is automatically a win. And I just want to note, for the record, in 1986, they were describing Terry Funk as middle-aged and crazy.
Yeah.
They were still using that line when he came back with Cactus Jack in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Amazing.
George Steele and Lou Albano were in a pool. This was goofy.
George Steele was screaming down a slide that may have been 8 feet long.
So Jesse interviewed Randy and Liz, and Elizabeth was there cowering and looking at Randy and then looking away and looking at him and looking away. And I'm thinking, why is she so scared? What's going on here? And Randy then alerted us that he was going to teach her how to swim, and he proceeded to shove her. She took a bump off something high and fell way down into the water, and she landed in the water with a big splash, at which point Jesse Ventura went, ah! And he laughed uproariously.
Yes.
This was awesome.
Back when heels were fun.
Yeah.
Back when heels were awesome men.
Yes.
Now they all suck. Yes, this, as you have noted many times, This is a great spot because at the end, it's somebody jumping into a pool, but they always act like it's traumatic.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon, when they went back to the arena, actually said, I'm not making this up, he said, she could have drowned.
Yeah.
Liz fell screaming into this pool. It was as far as jumps in a pool go, it was pretty high, maybe 10 feet or so. But then she surfaced. She was breathing. She was swimming. She was fine. Vince was concerned she may have drowned.
We had Randy Savage and George Steele, who hit on Elizabeth for the match. Actually, he sniffed her, is what he did.
That's true.
This was more an angle than a match. Steele was chasing him all over and sniffing Elizabeth. And then finally he got distracted, and Savage hit him with one flying axe handle and pinned him. Great finish.
When I look back, that's my favorite part of this show, was actually the finishes.
I just talked about this with Dave. Literally, Sunday night, we were talking about matches holding up and the term holding up, and I noted that a lot of these matches we watch in the 80s, you could transport them today, and some of the guys are better at the fundamentals than a lot of the guys today, but the one difference is the finishes are so goofy. The finishes are so goofy back then.
Well, let's see what we have so far. We have a man being hit with a cast and then being knocked unconscious and put in a sleeper for the win. We have Hulk Hogan winning with the Axe Bomber, which is always great. And here we have George Steele being pinned with an axe handle.
Yeah.
And then it was followed by the Best of 1985 music video.
Yeah. It's something else.
I don't even know what to say.
There was a lot of wacky things happening in WWE in 1985.
And quite frankly, this was TNA-rific in that something would flash on the screen for a second, and I would say, hey, there's a guy with like chocolate on his face or something. And it would cut to something else entirely, and I had no idea what was going on. There was wackiness.
Do you realize how new the concept of a music video was in 1985, though?
Well, there's a fair point. It was.
No one had any idea what they were doing.
No one knew what they were doing. There was WrestleMania. There was the first wrestling album. A lot of clips from that. There was a lot of large men body slamming each other.
By the way, at the gym, for some reason, there's like a gold gym broadcasting network.
Yeah.
And they've been playing like...
If you see Land of a Thousand Dances by the WWF crew...
No.
That would be awesome.
Try the original video for True Blue by Madonna. It like plays every day that I go there. It's like three girls shaking their asses, and there's like a close-up of their asses. But they're shaking it like girls would shake them in the 80s. So they just kind of twist their hips. You know what I mean? And I'm like, why is this playing in 2009 at Gold's fucking gym? But that's what this reminded me of here. We had Nikolai Volkoff doing an interview about his peace match with Corporal Kirshner. A peace match, everybody. You see, there's a mad Russian and a U.S. hero, and they're going to have a technical wrestling match with no cheating for peace.
I believe Vince announced this is following the Geneva summit. And so in the spirit of that peace meeting, they were having the peace match between the Russian and the American hero.
A peace match.
Yes. And you know what? That legit may be the first peace match in wrestling history. We've seen grudge matches. We have seen mean guy matches. I have never seen a peace match before.
I'll tell you something else. People are going to be just gobsmacked when they hear this, but I had never actually seen Corporal Kirshner wrestle. I know that probably sounds impossible to believe.
I have, not in many years. I've forgotten how truly horrible he was.
They interviewed him to the Rocky theme, one of the Rocky themes, and I could not for the life of me figure out who to compare this man to. And it also explained why I've never seen him wrestle before. Not very memorable. I came up with Ricky Ortiz with less charisma.
Yes, that's a pretty good comparison. He's a large, handsome man who just had nothing of value to say.
No.
And a very non-military haircut, by the way.
And just he couldn't even like look in one place. He would randomly look all over the place.
It was not a good promo. And they showed clips of him on hands and knees crawling through thick grass. And then they had clips of him allegedly skydiving. It could have been anyone skydiving, really, but they said it was Corporal Kirshner. And then he said he had mastered land and air. Now he's going to show his military training by going into water. And he grabbed a zip line and he screamed, USA! And he jumped into a pool.
Then we had the peace match. Volkov, by the way, is fucking so thick and just the most powerful-looking dude on the show.
He's barrel-chested.
Yeah.
I would say squat, but he's 6'5 or whatever.
Malenko also refereed this match.
This is where we realize I think he was Dean Malenko.
He looked exactly the same, except he had more hair.
Well, it was... First you said it, and I thought you were joking. And I waited for the ref to come back on screen, and I thought, oh, yeah, it's about Dean Malenko's height, and he's got more hair, but kind of the same haircut. And then I looked at him, and he had... Well, it's Dean Malenko. He had the same posture and body language.
It was fucking Dean Malenko!
It was fucking Dean Malenko. So here's Dean Malenko watching this technical wrestling match.
Oh, yeah.
The man of 1,000 holds watching the men with 5 combined holds. And Nikolai knew 4. I earlier mocked the headlock spot of Jesse and Uncle Elmer. Corporal Kirchner's headlock. Kirchner's headlock, everyone.
He's a horrible wrestler. Like, horrendous.
If we took 5 people off the street and put them in Buddy Wayne's ring and said, do a headlock, at least 3 would do better than this.
Yeah. So, they had a technical match until Volkov cheated and won with a knee drop. That was a finish.
Yes.
And then the corporal ran nuts and beat up Sheik and Volkov. Sheik was golden on this show, as he always is.
He announced Iran number 1, Russian number 1, USA Haktui.
The only thing that's changed about the Iron Sheik in all these years is he's, like, out of shape and immobile now. Everything else is exactly the same.
That is true, but that change is so dramatic.
It is a very dramatic change.
He used to be a very athletic man. Now he is not.
And then the main event, or at least, well, they did differently.
The last match.
They did differently back in the day. They'd put the main events on first, but the final match on this program was Don Morocco and Mr. Fuji, wrestling, mind you, against Ricky Steamboat and the Junkyard Dog. Now, I've heard that Don Morocco's a really nice guy. Also heard he loves the weed. It's a rumor, everybody. But you'd think he might love the weed, watching his promo before this particular match. He appeared in no condition to perform, or at least in no condition to do much.
To speak, for sure. It was... You can't say at that point that he loved the weed, because there was no more weed left to love. He appeared to have smoked it all. There was none left.
He was magnificently bad.
This man was high as a kite.
They got the heat on Dog for a while, and Steamboat got the hot tag. He looked so light, by the way. I was begging.
Yeah, Steamboat was better than Mr. Fuji and the Junkyard Dog and a stoned Don Morocco. Although, honestly, Mr. Fuji was not as horrible as I was expecting.
No, he was all right.
After watching the Elmers and the Kirshners of the world, Mr. Fuji was a short little old fat guy who would do some strikes and take some silly bumps, and for that, he was fine.
And then Steamboat hit a body press on Morocco. Fuji broke it up, so the Dog got a second hot tag, and then this is what happened, everybody. I swear to God.
On the subject of wacky finishers.
Junkyard Dog gets a hot tag. He steps through the ropes. Fuji just freezes in his tracks, puts his hands to his side, stares at the Dog. The Dog grabs Fuji's head. He gives him a headbutt. Fuji falls down, and the Dog pins him.
That's what happened.
I realize that the Junkyard Dog used the headbutt regularly as a finisher, but Christ, come on now. This was absurd. So, anyway, that was the main event here. I laughed uproariously at the headlock finisher because, seriously, what the fuck else can you do? The guy pinned him with a headbutt, and yeah. Horrible one at that.
So, not the best show we have watched in 24/7. Certainly not the worst.
No.
Mostly just an hour of pure wackiness. With a pretty good title match.
It is exactly what it was right there. So, all right, let's play one more. Wasn't there one that you sent?
The crumbly theme I sent to you.
I don't know if I have that
one. I shouldn't have spoiled the surprise. We're going to play it anyway.
Well, I can't find it right now. We'll play that one later.
Some other time.
Let's play...
I'm a fan.
Oh, we already played Five Star Funk. That was a really...
That's a great name, by the way.
That was the name of it. Well, I think we played this one recently, but we'll play it one more time because this guy is... he's known for making very good songs. So, and since we were just doing Junkyard Dog...
Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
That was a very, that really played into today's show, quite frankly. We had Terry Funk and the Junkyard Dog.
That's true.
There you go.
A match made in heaven.
All right, everybody, that is it. This is, of course, a free show. So just to conclude today, if you love this show...
And who wouldn't?
WrestlingObserver.com. Vinny and I do a minimum of 2 shows per week, not to mention the 15 other shows that are produced every single week on this website. So if you can't get enough, if 1 a week is not enough for you, it's only $9.99. And if 15 fucking shows a week is not enough for you, you just have to go into the archives, and we have thousands and thousands of hours of audio for your car rides, your trips
train
to the
rides.
Gym, train rides, wherever you listen to your audio, we will hook you up. Not to mention all the newsletters and everything else. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. Guarantee if you sign up, you will not regret it. I guarantee, like John Cena guarantees he's winning the title at the pay-per-view, I guarantee if you sign up, you will not regret it, at least in terms of how much content you can get. So that is it from here. We'll be back tomorrow, actually. And by the way, for you freeloaders, we had a fucking great interview today with Jim Mitchell, the Sinister Minister. It was awesome. Gotten a lot of good reviews about that. And tomorrow we've got 2 shows. Dr. Lucha Steve Sims talking AAA and CMLL in the morning. And then in the evening we will interview Jeff Lean, the author of the Mildred Burke book from the Washington Post. Should be an awesome show. So that's coming up tomorrow. So, freeloaders, I guess we'll talk to you next week. And everybody else, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Adios.